Hey everyone, welcome to Murder, She Spoke, the Murder, She Wrote themed podcast where I go through episodes of Murder, She Wrote. Each episode of the podcast is dedicated to one episode of Murder, She Wrote. I started with episode 1, season 1, but I realized throughout recording that there's some that I want to jump around with, and this one we're doing today is Season 2, Episode 2, Joshua Peabody Died Here, Possibly. The reason why I'm jumping around is there is a new character that's introduced in Season 2 at this episode, and it's Dr. Seth Hazlitt, who is a very, very close friend of Jessica's, and he's one of my second favorite character. First favorite if you don't include Jessica. He's a very, very endearing character, and he plays off very well with Jessica. He's a very he's well-educated in the art of acting. He's very professional, and he has a mid-Atlantic accent, and I love it. Now, don't worry. This is jumping to season 2, and we were in season 1, and we haven't talked about every episode in season 1, but this will not ruin anything. The only thing that is consistent that you need to know is Jessica is a famous author. She's famous for writing murder mysteries. She lives in Cabot Cove, where this episode is set. And she's close with everyone. One of her good friends is the sheriff, Amos Tupper, played by Tom Bosley. And that's really all you need to know going into this. Which I like, because if you want to skip a few episodes here and there, it's easy to do without losing a lot. But I only skip... one or two here and there if I read the description and really hate it, which I recommend not reading descriptions for any show, because there's so many show episodes that I've been turned off by based on the description, and the description is very misleading. So I just find that's a personal thing I try not to do anymore. So in this episode, it's one of the better Cabot Cove, well, one of the best Cabot Cove episodes. I find that all the episodes of Murder, She Wrote are the best ones are set in Cabot Cove. Here, the first scene, we start with a camera shot panning up onto a man in jeans. He's an activist. You can see it's a construction site. There are protesters. The sheriff has to come in, and then we have the character that is the head protester is David Marsh. He is a peaceful protester, and then we have, a lot of, other characters here, like Harry Pierce, you'll notice, is, he played Gomez Adams in the Adams Family, and this was before the Adams Family, you can tell. You'll see his face and realize he looks very familiar, and that's who he is. The sheriff comes, and one of the scenes in this is that's really, really weird, and it's almost like a scene in a musical, is when the sheriff is in between Harry and David, and he's trying to separate them and keep them from arguing. And then someone's like, hey, look down. What do we found? And all the construction workers are like scattered across the ground, like standing. They're all holding tools and they're all staring at the fight. The sheriff's breaking up. And then all of a sudden, all synchronized, they all turn the other direction. And it's not weird. It wouldn't be weird if they're, in a group and they'd, all turned over and looked in the direction the guy was yelling. but they were all spread out, and it was, like, almost all evenly. They're, like, a good, like, 3 feet apart, or 4 feet apart, each of them. And I just thought it was such a weird way to, block that scene. If they were even, like, uneven a bit, it would have made it less ridiculous looking. And to pair that up with another ridiculous scene is when they all run to the hole and all of them line up, like, around the edge and peer in, and it's very, very synchronized again, which is so weird. The next scene is awesome because the next scene shows that there's a sign in front of a little, quaint little house, and it says Seth Hazlitt, MD, physician and surgeon, and this kind of lays down all the groundwork here with a simple sign by saying Seth is the town doctor, he's a hometown physician, and then it shows him telling someone that they need, their prescription is to go on vacation. So Jessica's there, and she has a bad back. And what I like about the relationship is that it's very banter-based back and forth. They're both old, they're both stubborn, they're both very intelligent. And they have a really good back and forth. The funny thing is that she injured her back, and he knows exactly how. And he's giving her a hard time about it, but then the whole reason she's there is to run by some book ideas. To run some book ideas by him because she's stuck with some plot points that she doesn't know how to flush them out. And then while they're talking, Amos comes in and needs Seth to check a body out. So Jessica goes with them to the crime scene. I like the filming of them walking to the hole. The background action is very realistic looking. There are people walking different ways, construction workers everywhere. They needed a lot of extras for this. And I really like that they didn't skimp on that. There are a lot of construction men just standing around watching. And honestly, that isn't the realest thing. It's almost like you could easily have blocked that scene and been like, oh, we want it to look realistic, so we're going to have all the construction workers keep working so it doesn't look like we're filming a scene. But then, like, also, that would be unrealistic. If there's a dead body found on a scene, the construction workers would 100% be watching what's going on. So it's, like, super, like, Inception when it comes to, like, what would really be happening. Like, I don't know if I'm explaining this well, but I feel like a lot of, like, people who shot sitcoms or I could see this taking a different turn. I don't think you would be noticed really by many viewers the choice to make a lot of the construction workers stand around could easily be construed as bad blocking, but it's very realistic blocking. And I like that. I really appreciate that. At around 6:11, you see Pierce and the foreman. Harry Pierce is running after the foreman, and the landscaping is beautiful. Just the set is an actual, it's on location. And I find it really weird that the trailer that they run into, the trailer looks like as thin as a soup can and like super, super like a as thin as a horse can and is like insulated as a, did I say a horse can? What I meant was as thin as a soup can and as insulated as like a horse trailer. That's what it looks like, and the guy is like living in it on the site. But like also the truck that's in front of it, it's very like thick, good quality, just dirty. So it's a very interesting comparison to be looking at both of those things. I like that they live in a very tight-knit community, and if something's going on and they need help with it, the other citizens will stand behind them. At least some of them will. Because there are episodes where there is mob mentality, and that's very indicative of a small town also. There are pockets of people that are supportive and there for each other, and there are pockets of people that judge each other and spread rumors and scandals all about town. But in this episode, some of the, I'd have to say the more powerful people in town being Jessica, the sheriff, Seth, Hazlitt, and they really support David Marsh, who is the protester, and they finagle their way into stopping construction because they found a skeleton who is possibly Joshua Peabody, who is a fictional Revolutionary War hero. Well, we're not sure if he's fictional or not, but legend has it he was a Revolutionary War hero. But no one has any proof that he actually existed. It's all, you know, word of mouth for decades and decades. So they, I also like how Jessica suggests things and kind of like wink wink to the sheriff that he, hops onto. He's not too proud to take Jessica's advice. And she does it in a very respectful way, without being like, clearly you should be doing this. She suggests things, so that Amos is clever enough to pick up on them. I also like how Seth is looking at the skull and sees there's a hole in it and takes it up the ladder to show Jessica, because she can't go down the ladder. And I like how they both discuss things and bounce things off each other, too. It's all about respect, for especially for Seth and Jessica. And that's a very, very great dynamic to have there. Especially because Seth clearly knows what... He doesn't need Jessica's second opinion. He knows what he's seeing. He's a doctor. But he wants a second opinion from Jessica, who correctly identifies the fact that this man was hit in the head, hit in the skull, and there's a hole there. Now, the next scene I want to discuss is David Marsh owns an antique shop. And he goes home from the construction site, and his wife and son are there. And his son got into a fight because a kid was making fun of his dad. And his dad, David Marsh, looks like a mix between Mike and Greg Brady. Mostly Mike Brady. And I think it's a very interesting look. Here you find out that he's very peaceful. They also have a Don Quixote reference, which, I always enjoy a good Don Quixote reference. This storyline, kind of boring. Even though later on it gets really exciting in theory, I still find it kind of boring. The next scene I really like, that is, Harry Pierce, the sheriff, doctor, and Jessica are all in the doctor's office. Seth has the skeleton on the examination table. And what I like about that is the skeleton isn't white. It isn't just a fake skeleton that they didn't put a lot of effort into. It's a yellowed brown skeleton, realistic, decomposed looking. And I like the aesthetic of the walls and the posters and the just a very hometown, realistic looking doctor's office. Another great dynamic of this show, or well, of this episode, is that the dead body could either be Joshua Peabody, or it could be someone reenacting the Revolutionary War battle in Cabot Cove. So they either could be more modern or not. And I think that's a really cool dynamic for this episode. Next, we get to meet some awful characters. We have Arthur Griswold, who is a lawyer. Leo Kowalski, we have already met. He is the foreman. And then Henderson Wheatley is the one who's in charge of the construction. He's the man who's funding it. He's the Donald Trump of that hotel. Arthur Griswold is his lawyer, and he clearly is a horrible person. And then a reporter, Del Scott, comes in to discuss. She's been following him, discussing how he doesn't always follow the rules and regulations of construction sites. And the first thing you notice is how freaking stunning her eyes are. They are a blue that looks like they're contacts, but I'm pretty sure they're not. But that the blue of her eyes are just so insane. They're just gorgeous. Now, Del, the reporter, comes across Jessica Fletcher. Of course, she knows who she is because it's Jessica Fletcher. And I think this scene's interesting because they're walking up a hill. Jessica has her bike. Del is just walking, you know, just holding her purse. And you see, like, all the cars passing by. The set isn't, There are cars passing by. It's not just an empty road for the sake of filming. There are realistic cars driving by, realistic action on the city streets. You're filming on an actual set. Or not an actual set, on an actual street. You see the water behind them. The only unrealistic thing is, Del ran into Jessica. And more realistically, if you ran into someone and wanted to talk to them, you would be standing still. If I met someone on the street, I would just stand still and talk to them, and then when it was done, I'd walk away. But they're walking together, which makes it more cinematic, more interesting to watch, let's say. Next, we see two farmers coming over to the sheriff to discuss one of their farmers went missing 14 years ago, around the same time that the Battle of Cabot Cove, the Battle of Cabot Cove reenactment happened. So that's throwing some validity into that argument. But they are definitely a farming hick, never left the town stereotype for farmers. It's almost like, I don't know, it's really weird. Okay, so I had to take a break between the last thing I said and just now. So it's been a day since I recorded what you just heard, so if anything sounds off or different, that's why. So, continuing with Season 2, Episode 2, Joshua Peabody Died Here, Possibly. I am at the part where the two farmers come in and talk about a fellow missing farmer that happened during a reenactment. His name is Ellsworth Buffum, and he is the head of the Joshua Peabody fan club. No, it's not fan club, it's society, but pretty much the same thing. the two farmers were there, and then honestly, this is such like a kitsch, like they're playing into all the stereotypes right now. Like not stereotypes, but they're using like really basic character molds in this, like two hick farmers that have never left the town or their farm, and then there's some super nerd who has a cane, but he's young. He comes in wearing tweed and a bow tie and an argyle sweater vest and a tweed trilby, and it's a lot. It's a lot of kind of like stereotypes that are like I can't even remember what it's called. Like they're I mean, he's clearly the nerd, the book nerd sort of like you'll like when you watch the episode, you'll see that they're very playing into the stereotypes of each character that they're playing. So there isn't any real, I don't know, uniqueness to the characters. They're just playing, like, their names are, like, if they didn't have names, it would be Nerd 1, Farmer 1 and 2. Anyway, the Ellsworth, he, asked for the remains of Joshua Peabody, because he's from the Joshua Peabody Society. He wants to collect the remains, which concerns me only because just because he's in charge of he's the president of the Joshua Peabody Society, what makes him think that the remains belong to the society or him for that matter? He just went to collect them, no like paperwork or anything. Okay, so the guy from the Historical Society place. Okay, so Amos gets a phone call while he's talking to them, that there is an emergency, so he leaves and he goes up to the construction site where there's a fight protesting, and then the evil guy who's in charge of all the construction, who the reporter is out to get, he's fighting, blah blah blah, and turns out Ellsworth Buffum is there to save the day. But I want to know how he got up there so fast, because one, like Amos Topper didn't tell him where he was going and what the emergency was. And he would have to find out where the body was buried very quickly. He'd have to find his way around town quickly because, he's from Kennebunkport and he's clearly not from Cabot Cove unless he knew the area already, unless he already had all the information, like where the body was, where the construction is. So like he just appears up there and, like the one guy's lawyer is like, you can't stop the construction even if there is a murder scene. And then Buffum is like, here I have, he had something that overrode the injunction to, because it's a historical landmark, possibly. So it needs a historical investigation, essentially. And then Jessica's like leading the crowd against I can't even remember his name, the evil guy, Wheatley. I don't know why I can't remember that. So he's like, what the fuck? And then Jessica's like, we can protect ourselves, like fuck off. Okay, so the next scene, it's fucking Seth Hasley, my favorite, and Jessica in Jessica's kitchen, and they're cooking together. He's making the salad. And she's at the oven, and she's testing like sauce or something. I find it very endearing that he's wearing an apron and making a salad, because back then, like, he's very old. He has to be in his 70s in this episode, and he's not, he's clearly not sexist, because I've seen so many people that age, or, in TV shows, even in the 90s, where men are like, salads for the women, they can make the salads sort of deal, they wouldn't put on an apron. I mean, obviously, that's not everyone, but, considering that this character is very bullheaded and set in his ways, he is not not fundamentally sexist. Like, their relationship when they're back and forth is just so brilliant, and that's a testament, obviously, to the acting and to the writing. And also the staging of the scene where she's in the other room. They're cooking, and then she goes over to the chess table, and then he's opening a bottle. It's very, like, fast-paced. It's very, very fluid, as if it were real. They bring up Joshua Peabody, and then it's so cute. He realized his biscuits were burning. Like, oh my goodness, he's so freaking adorable. I love him so much. And I love how Seth, when she bends over to get the biscuit, she throws her back out again. And then Seth, like, fixes it with a chiropractic trick, which I think it's funny. Like, nowadays, being a chiropractor is, like, considered an actual, like, field of medicine. Where I know back then, like, I've seen a few shows from the 80s where they consider it, like, not witchcraft, but, like, they don't consider it legitimate. I think it's funny that he knows what he's doing. Also, a realistic touch. Usually in sitcoms and stuff, when something comes out burnt, it's like black, completely black charred, like crazy charred. I was expecting that when he pulled the biscuits out. I honestly was expecting them to be completely black. And honestly, they weren't that burnt. Like, there was just, like, a little, like, a circular ring around, like, the top that was black, and the rest was, like, brown, but, like, they looked like they could have been maybe salvaged, but they'd be really hard. And, I really appreciate that attention, to detail, because it's not, like, these are completely black like rocks. So I like that part. So Seth is being so fucking sweet. He's so sweet. I love him. So he tells Jessica about things he saw while observing, like, while he checked over the skeleton, and he found something in the pocket. And when Seth shows her that he made a 7-layer cake just for her. Like, honestly, could he be any better? Like, I would marry him in a second. He made Jess a 7-layer cake. He is a doctor. He had so much work to do. And he made Jessica a 7-layer cake. He's there making her dinner. He's making biscuits, salad, spaghetti sauce. Like, he's so great. But I like how realistic that, I know it's kind of such a trope where you can't figure out a mystery and then something, like, jogs your memory. Like, in this scene, Jessica, when he says 7-layer cake, Jessica's like, layers, that's it. But, like, honestly, as someone who, I definitely figure things out that way. I find that, like, I write books, and I find that if I can't figure something out, and I also write murder mysteries, ironically, if I can't figure something out, there are two things that I do. One, I completely step away from what I'm writing. And I try not to think about it at all. I completely clear my head and forget about what I'm doing. I distract myself, just let it go. And then in the middle of doing something later, something pops in my head, or and I don't, like, I legitimately let go of what I was writing for the moment. It may take a day. I find something else to do. And I don't do this with the intention of knowing that I'm going to think of something while I'm doing this. I legitimately let go of trying to figure out the plot of the book. And this happens often then when an idea will suddenly come to me that will work. And then I'm able to go back and continue writing. And I found that that's a very useful thing. But also, that's another method is by association. Like, in this episode, she associated the, when he said seven layer cake, and she's like, oh my gosh, layers. Like, that sort of word triggering is something else that helps me when I'm, like, watching TV or doing something, and I hear a word. Like, that association is very, very helpful. And though it's such a cliche thing in a murder mystery episode, it also is a cliche because it's actually a realistic thing. She obviously didn't think of layers before, and also that's very realistic. The fact that she didn't have an answer, the fact that we see her struggle to figure things out, she's not like Sherlock Holmes, where he always knows everything all the time, no issues, all this. And then when he has an issue and can't figure it out, he's too guarded to admit it. Like, that is not... Sherlock Holmes is very intelligent. But the current day, like, the BBC Sherlock with Benedict Cumberbatch is not realistic. It's very entertaining, but it's also not realistic. Where Jessica is very clever. She's very smart. Everyone comes to her, but also she's human. She has trouble with the murder mysteries. She even has trouble writing murder mysteries sometimes. Where even in this episode, she couldn't figure out what she wanted to do with. And it's refreshing to see that she's depicted as a very intelligent person, but also that she asks for help also, and that she doesn't know everything all the time, always, but she always finds her way out of a sticky situation using her intelligence, and she does eventually figure things out, and I think that's very, it's a very good thing to see, because a lot of people who say aren't good at solving mysteries or writing or whatever, they assume that people are automatically good at those things. Like, people see my writing and think, oh, I was born a writer, I automatically have all these great ideas, and that's not the case. We struggle all the time, and people that seem really good at things struggle a lot too. And I think that's a really good message in pretty much every one of these episodes. What I like, at 22 minutes and 46 seconds in, well, we're not very far into the episode, and I've been recording for so long. We have the trailer, on the edge of the cliff here, and honestly, the view is beautiful. I really like how they filmed this in on location, a location. I don't know if it was actually filmed in Maine or not, but the fact that they could have easily used, like, screens to portray that they were at a cliff in front of the ocean. And I really appreciate that they didn't, because it really would have destroyed the authenticity of the town. Nothing's fake when it comes to the scenery. They stand next to the ocean. The ocean is really there. They dig in the sand. The sand is there. It's not on a set stage, and I really like the views throughout all the episodes, and the angles they use to film various conversations. A lot of them are just normal, but then there are a lot that are just brilliant. Right after at 2302, Jessica and Harry Pierce are walking, and the way they framed that shot of Jessica with her umbrella kind of like surveying the ground to see if she can find any clues, and she's wearing an all like denim outfit with some rain boots, and she looks very like East Coast, sort of like New England-y, which I think is great. The angle they use with, it's very much a turned out sort of thing for the camera, and I like it because the shot is very nice. And I like Jessica's acting, or Angela Lansbury's acting is just really great because she is looking for clues, but it's also trying to half-heartedly acknowledge what this guy is saying. And she is, but you can tell they're very, throughout various episodes, they, I'm sorry. I haven't slept today and it's 8 a.m. and my brain isn't working. And I'm having such a hard time finding words to describe things at the moment. But there are many episodes where Jessica, she has to represent various emotions. And Angela Lansbury is a brilliant actress in portraying this character because the emotions she uses in each scene are very realistic. You feel that this character is a real person with real, like, they react in a way that is very realistic. Another thing that comes up a lot are tie clips. Not everyone wears tie clips, but considering the last episode, a tie clip was important. In this episode, there is also a tie clip involved. It looks like that tie clips are a thing only when they're trying to, like, in the last episode, I talked about the tie clip was on the environmental reporter. And this tie clip is on the victim. Mr. Wheatley was murdered. And I find it interesting that tie clips are used in that way because Harry Pierce is standing in the scene when Jessica has the tie clip in her hand. And he is not wearing a tie clip. I think Amos sometimes wears a tie clip. But I find it very interesting that Jessica must, as the character, Jessica must be very fond of tie clips. And I can understand that. I am also. So when you meet someone and they see they have a tie clip, I think it's rare enough to be realistic that the first thing she noticed when she saw the dead body was that his tie clip was missing. So she was looking, that's what she was looking for on the ground was his tie clip. And she found it next to the RV, not the trailer or whatever. Something that the writer does that I appreciate is create, like, Jessica in this scene at 2457 is confused about why the body was placed where it was above where the other skeleton was found. She's very much set on the location, and that is not something I would focus on personally. In fact, I don't know if it would have even occurred to me that the location is weird. I mean, it is weird, but I don't know if I would have thought, you know, why was the body put here? I guess it kind of like, if I were to kill someone during that time, I probably would have put the body, like, I don't know if it would have been something that, I don't know, if I had killed someone and wanted to remove the body, I don't think I would have put it there because they're clearly going to find the body because that's like such a vocal point. And I guess maybe that's what she's thinking. Maybe by talking that out just now, I think I kind of realized what Jessica was doing. Why would they put the body there when they know that that place is going to be looked at the next day? So clearly they wanted the body to be found. I mean, the person who killed Wheatley could have easily just dumped the body in the ocean. I mean, they're surrounded by ocean. That's the easiest freaking way to get rid of a body, especially like if you, even if it washes up on shore, the salt water gets rid of evidence on the body a lot faster than, say, burying it or hiding it somewhere. So, I mean, the only real risk would be getting seen dumping the body. But honestly, they could have done a billion things. They could have hit it anywhere because no one knows who the killer is. So they didn't even, like, if that person hid the body, they wouldn't have even known that Wheatley was dead for a while. I mean, they would have 100% probably gotten away with it, or at least would have been able to get out of town before anything happened if they didn't live in town. I don't know who the killer is. Maybe it could have been the construction workers. It could have been someone in town. I mean, if it was one of the construction workers or the foreman from out of town, I mean, maybe they were sick of working that job and decided that they were going to leave the job anyway. But also, what's the motive, too? So when the FBI agent shows up, he looks like a very old Conan O'Brien. Like a mix between Conan O'Brien and that one guy from Star Wars that had kind of like the sunken face. Very interesting. This storyline I didn't like. I didn't like any of it. Regarding Marsh and what's his name? Oh yeah, regarding David Marsh and the FBI agent Fred Keller, played by Chuck Connors. It was a really far-fetched storyline to begin with. I liked the intrigue of how he in fact was a different person, but clearly innocent of any like violent crimes. And I liked that part, but the end, I mean, it was okay too. I guess I just, like, overall, when the storyline ended, I appreciated it, but I just hate when people are accused of things and they're innocent, and that really bothers me. So, like, I felt very anxious, when the storyline really began. I think it's sort of against Jessica's character almost. Or it's a character flaw of Jessica's that's realistic. This isn't done by the writer or the actor. There are two options here. Either the writer wrote this way, for the sake of the storyline, or that this is in fact an actual thought out character flaw for Jessica, that she, without any real evidence, does not believe David Marsh bombed anything, harmed anyone, killed anyone, and this is solely based on the fact that she's known him for years, And I understand that's a very good reason to not believe that someone has done some horrible things. But also, from her experiences, it's also a really great reason to search out actual evidence. Because no one ever thinks their neighbor is a murderer. No one ever thinks anything. Like, so David Marsh could easily have been a horrible person that the FBI thinks he is without Jessica even realizing it. Though Jessica is a very good judge of character, people that are psychopaths or sociopaths are very good at preying on what people think they should be like or their projected selves. So I find it interesting that Jessica put aside all of her normal evidence-driven rhetoric, sort of, just to protect David. And even in the end, she risks a lot along with Seth to protect David. All I have to say is that if you want to figure something out or want people to tell you stuff, you just have to be nice to them. You don't have to demand anything. You just have to be caring. Like when Jessica goes to the foreman with some Neosporin and she really talks to it. She's also much bolder than I would ever be. But again, she can get away with it because she is an old lady, and people just write that off as her being a nosy old lady, which is a stereotype that she plays well. She is a nosy old lady, but no one really suspects of, like, foul play with her because, even criminals underestimate how intelligent an old lady can be. No one gives old ladies enough credit. And Jessica, she always has an ulterior motive. If she's being nice to a random person, it's because she's trying to get some information. Now jumping to 3742, where Jessica is in the sheriff's office and the sheriff is talking about how it doesn't pay to change your name. I really like the shot here. The thing that Amos says, it doesn't pay to change your name because you know your past will still haunt you eventually. Jessica is leaned over the counter, wearing a very nice tweed looking but lighter, like a thinner tweed looking jacket. She has her glasses in her hand. She's looking very, like, collegiate, like a professor. And I really, really like that look on her. And that's when she figures something out. And that the framing of that is beautiful. The scene where you find out the murderer is Della. It's brilliant. And I know I say that a lot about this show, but obviously this is my favorite show, so of course I'm gonna say that. What I like is how Jessica traps her, how Jessica figures things out, and how, but there is an issue. The whole thing is based on the fact that Del said in an interview with the sheriff that, you know, when you pulled open the when you pulled up the tarp, were you surprised to see the dead body there? And the fact that she couldn't have known the tarp was there unless she had been there between 2 a.m. and, you know, like, after 2 a.m. when the tarp was put down, because by the time she reached the site, the tarp was already gone. I don't know if this actually shows whether she got out of the car And I think she got out of the car and immediately went to try and interview Jessica or whatever. But considering that she could have talked to other people and the word of mouth in a small town is very, very fast, she could have easily claimed that she heard that there was a tarp over the body. But I'm sure Jessica would have figured out a way to prove that that wasn't the case, because I'm pretty sure from the scene that she got out of her car and went straight to Jessica and Amos. So unless it was reported on the radio or something, which could have been a totally different plot line. But at the point, I think that might be why Jessica didn't just bring that up first and accuse her. Jessica, like, really dug her in a hole and then poured the water in by revealing her secret identity, by talking about her brother, by getting her to admit her feelings and hatred for him, for Wheatley. Because if she just would have accused her by those words, she would have been able to wiggle out of it, probably. But she was already done, and she knew that by the time Jessica told her what the piece of evidence was, when the linchpin in the case was. And then, I honestly really love watching that scene. And then the final scene where Seth fakes the bone, and the FBI agent is like, fucking calls him out when he's leaving. He's like, that's not an arm bone. Like, I feel like, I mean, it's realistic in the sense that he was chasing this man not on company time, so it was more like a personal goal of his, so he could have easily let it go. He realized that he was after the wrong man, and I feel like it's funny that he admitted, like, he revealed that he knew what they were doing, and I think that's a good quality in law enforcement, where if someone's accused of something and they clearly know that they didn't do it, even though there isn't any evidence. Well, even in this case, there was evidence to prove it, but it satiated his desire for justice. And it was a good, like, lighthearted ending also. This is one of my favorite episodes, just as a representation of a Cabot Cove setting for the episode. I mean, I just watched it, obviously, and I don't want to watch it again, because it's in my head now. I don't know, so there are some other great Cabot Cove episodes that I'm going to be discussing, and I just have to say that today's podcast, I am sorry that my brain isn't all there today, but I really did like this episode. The setting, there aren't many Cabot Cove episodes in season one, and this is season two, episode two, and they're already showing such different settings for things, because they could easily fall into a very boring pattern of, oh, a random killing in a random town person's house. Like, and it's easy to fall into a pattern with a script, with a premise, with especially murder mysteries. And here, that doesn't happen. There are so many various and diverse storylines, and I don't think I've seen one episode where I was like, oh, this kind of follows the same pattern as one I've already seen. Now, a lot of the New York-themed episodes kind of do that, where an executive gets killed or a worker gets killed, and all the storylines are different. There are different parts in it, but also a lot of them are very much the same sort of, you meet the workers in the building and then you see how they tie to Jessica somehow. And the Cabot Cove ones, the Cabot Cove episodes are just very brilliant. And of course, Agatha Christie, just, I can't even comprehend, I can't fathom the amount of unique murder scenarios she created from, like, I've seen almost every episode of Poirot, Hercule Poirot, and I've seen a lot of Miss Marple, and I love that Miss Marple and Jessica Fletcher are both old women that solve mysteries, but they're completely different people. And also, they're completely different storylines. They don't mimic each other. When there are a lot of, I know there are a lot of murder mystery scenarios, like, that will use the same, a different character, but a same sort of, like, storyline, but change the characters' names, maybe change the location to mix it up a bit, but, none of that I've seen so far, really. From Miss Marple to Jessica Fletcher, it's a very unique, very distinct characters and people that are the other characters that the supporting characters. That's it. I found the words. The supporting characters are also very different. And the character quality is very developed, and I don't know whether that goes to the Agatha Christie or the actual script writers. I think it goes to both, really, because the script writers have to clearly understand what makes each character as good as they are and really make them three-dimensional for the screen. So yeah, that was another episode of my podcast, Murder, She Spoke, about Murder, She Wrote. And the next podcast, we will probably do one more that's set in Cabot Cove from season 2, just to get more acquainted with Seth Hazlitt as a character. And then we might move on to some other ones that aren't set in Cabot Cove. But thanks for listening. Thank you.